Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, soedi korup, guten tag, jawi viva cat bang, half a day, jai jinendra, salam,
shalom,
peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection prison, kilitary industrial core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NSA, NRA, USA, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts. Oh, it's home of Uncle Sam Manala, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts. And the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And, this past week was pretty interesting for me. I was a guest on the show for which I was the inspiration, I am told, Vegan World Radio on KPFT, the Houston Pacifica radio station. The show was hosted by my old friend Anuj Shah, and also on the program was my old friend and hero, Anuj is my hero too, but also my hero, vegan peace mom Cindy Sheehan, to whom I am very grateful for the very complimentary words about Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Cindy apparently has figured out how to get me to not interrupt a speaker on a radio show. And when she was done, I thought I had a special request of her, since Cindy had previously run against Nancy NSA Pelosi for Con Greece, perhaps in light of the revelations that NSA Pelosi was, she's basically betrayed her constitutional oath and her constituents in favor of surveillance dictatorship, perhaps Cindy would consider running against her again. Breaking news, Cindy responded by saying it is her intention to run for governor of California in 2014, which would make her the first vegan governor ever. And, of course, I expect her to appoint me state secretary of banning meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. You can hear the show from this past Tuesday, August 13th. Visit veganworldradio.org and the archives at kpft.org. Well, a successful vegan program on air now for, over like 10 or 11 years on a Pacifica station in Houston. And we continue to attempt to chip away to infiltrate Pacifica's California radio stations. I am pleased to announce the return of my vegan animal liberation commentaries on in the 8 a.m. hour on Wednesday mornings, on the Morning Mix on KPFA in the San Francisco Bay Area, kpfa.org. Thanks to host Anthony Fest, who has invited me to do them. Oh, and this past Thursday, I participated in a bizarre interview for AR Zone, and the co-host of that podcast kind of lost it and hung up on me and just disappeared. So I'm not sure if that's posted yet or ever will be, but that'll be entertaining. He was trying to defend the Humane Society of the United States against me, and that even before revelations this past week on an HSUS Facebook page that basically vindicated all of my past criticism. All I can say is, I told you so, as HSUS blatantly admits that it is the meat industry, so-called meat industry. How could we have been confused, huh? Well, HSUS likes to confuse everyone, but there's no denying, if you look at the farmer outreach page on Facebook, first of all, don't farmers grow, like apples or, fruits, vegetables, grains, seeds. Farmers, I don't really think it's farming when you're breeding and killing animals, but Anyway, HSUS likes to confuse us. HSUS is conducting a free workshop if you're interested. If you do have animals to kill, you can join HSUS on Tuesday, August 27th. You see this listed on the HSUS Farmer Outreach page. Tuesday, August 27th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., the Isles Reception Hall in Lincoln, Nebraska. Learn how to add value to your product. So to HSUS, animals are product, and their murder is profit. The presentation schedule includes 10:30 in the morning, American Grass-Fed Association, 11:15 a.m., Certified Humane. That's where the big bucks are, you know, these days when you kill animals and have them certified humane. At noon, lunch will be served. I wonder how vegan the HSUS lunch will be that day. 12:30 p.m., the Global Animal Partnership five-step program to make people feel good about eating murder victims. And 1:15 p.m., USDA Organic. So there you have the good work of the butchers of HSUS. And, you know, what can I tell you? It basically says it all, right? And at this point, any vegan who supports HSUS is a vegan for meat. How can that be, huh? And I don't know. Just like, suppose it's all the confusion. And if the situation weren't confusing enough, I mean, it's cool to be a vegan, but a lot of people seem to be having trouble doing all the work, you know, which is basically leaving the dead animal body parts off the plate, you know, and the excretions and secretions. It's not really hard work when you think about it, considering what's so gross about the, you know, continuing to consume animal products. Let's see here. So for the second time in a matter of weeks, a group of researchers reported a link between the food people eat and bacteria in the intestines that can increase the risk of heart attacks. 2 weeks ago, well, this is now a couple weeks, more than 2 weeks ago, the investigators reported that carnitine, a compound found in red meat, can increase heart disease risk because of the actions of intestinal bacteria. This is, they report this time, they reported now in another report, this time, that the same thing happens with lecithin, which is abundant in egg yolks. When digested, one of the components of lecithin, choline, is metabolized by intestinal bacteria into a substance that the liver converts into a chemical known as TMAO, trimethylamine N oxide. High levels of TMAO in the blood are linked to increased risk of heart attack and stroke. So it would make no sense if, as I've seen reported lately, that supposed vegan Bill Clinton is eating eggs and fish. Where have I seen that reported lately? And I've also seen him quoted in the August-September 2013 AARP magazine in an article entitled, I've Stopped Eating Meat. No, he's quoted. Wait, what's the title of the article? Oh, the title of the article is Bill Clinton Explains Why He Became a Vegan. The 42nd president of the United States explains how we can, and for our health, must learn to love eating vegetables too. Okay, so in that article, his quote is, I stopped eating meat, cheese, milk, even fish. Well, wait a second. In that very same article, after outlining Clinton's regular menu, now of a breakfast, almost always an almond milk smoothie blended with fresh berries, lunch, usually some combination of green salad and beans, snacks, nuts or hummus with raw vegetables, dinner, quinoa, the Incan super grain, or sometimes a veggie burger. But wait, right after that, in the same article, it says, once a week or so, he will have a helping of salmon or an omelet. Well, wasn't he just quoted in the same article saying, I've stopped eating meat, cheese, milk, even fish? And then in the same article, he says he eats fish and eggs. Well, politicians sure like to have things both ways, huh? It's like Obama saying he supports legislation to protect whistleblowers and then prosecutes more whistleblowers than anyone in history. Okay, well, Bill Clinton doesn't eat fish except for the fish he eats. So Bill Clinton is a vegan? And once again, it depends on what the meaning of the word is. And in this case, is apparently means isn't. Typical talk from a politician who wants to have it both ways. Bill Clinton apparently is eating out of both sides of his mouth. Mr. President, for your next smoothie, may I suggest you blend peach, you know, peach juice, and some nice, you know, mint leaves. Peach mint. Peach mint. Peach mint. Impeachment. That's off the table. Well, should be on the table. It just shows everybody wants to be a vegan. It's so politically correct. I mean, a president is running for it. But sorry, Bill, if you want to join the vegan party, we don't compromise, you know, like, like the anti-constitutional Democrats for dictatorship who support NSA domestic spying, like Obama, Feinstein, Pelosi, Jackson Lee, Kennedy. Maybe you know, the Democrat Party will still allow you to call yourself one, but sorry, if you eat fish and eggs, you cannot call yourself a vegan. You may play the saxophone, Mr. President, but you are not cool enough, politically correct enough, to be a vegan. Come back, you know, when you're a vegan. Or maybe you're reading too much of that other vegan wannabe, you know, in the New York Times, the food writer in the paper there. Mark Bittman, who also lacks the self-control to become a real vegan. So he writes this moronic book suggesting being vegan every day before dinner time works. You know, it's VB6, vegan before 6, eat vegan before 6. This is the title of his book. VB6, eat vegan before 6 to lose weight and restore your health for good. Well, there you go, Mr. President. You can still be a vegan. Just eat your fish and eggs at night. Bittman's next book will probably be Vegan Between Meals. And then the next one after that, Vegan While Sleeping. And this guy is asleep and needs to wake up. To talk more about Mark Bittman and his book in the near future. But that music says we are running out of time, and I want to tell you that coming up on today's program, we have Wayne Shung to talk about an international march for animal liberation next Saturday. Professor Gary Francione coming up to talk about in vitro meat, and Dr. Helen Caldicott, the most articulate voice against nuclear energy and power, today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Broadcasting now for 12 years, as heard on Air America and Clear Channel and CBS radio stations, now nationally syndicated on the Genesis Communications Network. We are live, expanded to 2 hours every week now, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific time. Coming up this Saturday, an international event. Earthlings, no longer blind to the injustice. International March for Animal Liberation. That's, as I say, this coming Saturday, August 24th. And today we have one of the organizers of the international event. Wayne Shung is a lawyer, writer, and organizer for Direct Action Everywhere in the Bay Area. Prior to entering the practice of law, Mr. Shung was National Science Graduate Fellow at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the Harry N. Wyatt Scholar and Olin Law and Economics Fellow at the University of Chicago Law School. He served on the faculty of Northwestern School of Law as a Searle Fellow and Visiting Assistant Professor of Law. I have smart people on this radio show. I have we have Wayne on. We have Professor Francione coming up and Dr. Helen Caldicott. So what an education this program is. So welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Wayne, how are you today?
I'm great, Bob. And with that introduction, I think I have to be a little bit careful now.
What's that?
Since you filled me up so high, I have to live up to those expectations, huh?
Well, you already have, because you're involved with a major event for the animals this coming Saturday. Tell us about this event and what's happening and where.
So around 6,500 protesters are expected to get out on the streets for animal liberation in 33 different cities and 13 different countries. The original idea started in Israel just 2.5 weeks ago. I was contacted by a couple folks, Asaf Hordun and Sasha Bouzour, who do animal rights activists in Israel. They said they wanted to do an event to unify the animal rights community in Israel and around the world. I said that it sounded like a great idea. I didn't think there was a lot of time, but literally within days, we had hundreds of people all over the country who were interested in this idea. And they really liked this visual image, this metaphor of having blindfolds and unveiling those blindfolds and opening our eyes to violence that's happening behind closed doors. And now, 2.5 weeks later, we have, you know, thousands of people all over the country who are interested in and passionate about going out into the streets to march for animal liberation. So we're really excited about the event.
Okay. And do you know where some of these events are happening or how people can find out if something's happening locally?
Sure. So the easiest way to find out is to go onto Facebook onto our site, which is www.directactionever.com. The Facebook event is kind of all over Facebook. The URL is also on the Direct Action Everywhere website. This is a coalitional event, so it's not sponsored by any particular organization. Direct Action Everywhere in the Bay Area has taken sort of a lead role in organizing the solidarity marches in the United States. But there are marches happening in countries all over the world, as I said earlier, in Chile, in Costa Rica, most recently Slovenia, Ireland, the United Kingdom. I think London actually has the largest march outside of Israel. There are hundreds of people expected to march in London. And I think it's going to be a really powerful event. It's always really inspiring to see that animal rights activists are everywhere. And we feel very isolated. We feel weak. We feel like a minority in our local communities. But when we look around us at the world, we see that there are people who care profoundly about what's happening to these animals in places far removed from our local communities. And when we come together, we're so much stronger.
That's great. So I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. Where will I be going next Saturday if I want to participate?
So in the Bay Area, our march is being planned for Union Square at noon. So we'll start in Union Square, and we're going to go to five different locations to represent the five major areas of animal exploitation. We're going to end the march at City Hall, which is kind of a grandiose location, which will make for some really nice visuals. But City Hall, unfortunately, has also been somewhat notorious about ignoring animal abuse at, for example, the San Francisco Zoo. Their own Animal Welfare Committee had just a really incredibly damning report released, I think it was in 2008. And the Board of Supervisors of the City of San Francisco has ignored its own investigation showing that there is pervasive animal cruelty at the zoo. So the point of our event is we're trying to open people's eyes, we're trying to unify the animal rights community, we're trying to show our solidarity with activists all over the world. So we're expecting a few hundred people in San Francisco, but the few hundred in San Francisco will be marching with thousands of protesters all over the world.
And we want to say we no longer want to be blind to the injustice. We want everybody to see and join us, and people would have to go vegan. Wayne, we're just about out of time. Well, stay with us. We have to do a break, and then let me talk to you for another couple of minutes after the break, and then we'll talk to Professor Gary Francione with his commentary on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Just a few minutes from now, we'll hear from Professor Gary Francione on our weekly feature. I just want to finish up with Wayne Shung, one of the organizers of an international event coming up this Saturday. Earthlings, No Longer Blind to Injustice, the International March for Animal Liberation. And the principles of the demonstration, do you have them with you? Because I think they're rather striking.
I do. And the three principles for the march are, first, that we're all earthlings, whether we're human beings, dogs, cats, rats. We all share this planet. We all have the same feelings of pain and pleasure. We all want to be free and happy. The second principle is that we're no longer going to be blind to the injustice, that we're going to open our eyes and not be afraid to look at the violence, the suffering, the oppression that's happening behind closed doors. And the third is that we're going to be united, that notwithstanding differences of opinion about tactics, about backgrounds, about experiences, about organizational affiliations, on this day, August 24th, all the animal rights groups are going to be coming together, not just in our local communities, not just in the United States, but around the world. And I think the last one is possibly the most important, because there's so many divisions within this community. We want to come together behind a strong statement of animal liberation, that all animal exploitation is wrong, and that we can have the confidence of our convictions. We can stand behind the integrity of our moral message and say that we, together, will speak on behalf of all animals against violence.
And we will tell everyone to go vegan. That's why I'll have my megaphone there.
That's right. So, we'll be very happy to see you there, Bob.
Terrific, Wayne. Okay, so once again, just tell us the website and the Facebook page, and
sure. We'll
see you on
Saturday. So there are many different organizations that are supporting the event, including In Defense for Animals, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. But the one that is kind of taking the lead for organizing the event in the Bay Area and around the country is Direct Action Everywhere. And the website is www.directactioneverywhere.com. Again, this isn't a Direct Action Everywhere event. We're just playing a small role in organizing solidarity marches in the United States. And I hope to see many of you out there on August 24th.
And the Facebook page again?
The Facebook page, you're just going to have to look for Earthlings, No Longer Blind to Injustice, March for Animal Liberation. If you search those terms, it should come up. I could give the URL, but it's got a lot of numbers and digits that are not probably going to be very helpful.
We'll find it that way, so people can keep rewinding when they listen to the archive. Just keep rewinding until they get it down. So, all right, great. Well, we'll see you Saturday, and we'll talk to you in the future about your involvement and Direct Action Everywhere. Thank you for being with us today, Wayne Chung.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Okay. All right. See ya. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. And now I'm happy to introduce Professor Gary Francione. It's Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione of Rutgers University. He being the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. And welcome, Gary. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Bob. I have to ask you a question before we start, and that is, in the email that you sent me, I think this morning, I believe I interpreted you to say that you were unfamiliar with the television program Breaking Bad. Is that true, Bob?
I know. That's why I have to hurry you on here, because I know you want to get to see it. And
Bob. That's not the point. I can always see a repeat. I'm just concerned. I'm concerned that you've not seen it. It's a wonderful program about the problem about a man spiraling morally downward. It's really sort of a metaphor for us all in many ways.
I had never heard of it until you said, "Wow, I'm glad to be on in the 5 p.m. hour because I can watch Breaking Bad in the."
Indeed. You may be the only person other than Martians who don't know about Breaking Bad. They probably know it as well. I want to talk about in vitro meat, because this is now a big thing, because they came up with the first in vitro burger a couple of weeks ago in London. Cost them a few hundred thousand dollars to develop, and so now we've got a lot of animal people. PETA is proclaiming the virtues of in vitro meat, as is Peter Singer. Peter Singer stated that he'd be willing to try it, and all this sort of stuff. And so I've been getting flooded with, is in vitro meat vegan? There's a simple answer to that question. No, of course not. What do you mean, is it vegan? Of course it's not vegan. There's this idea that they've got, like, you know, one happy cow sitting around, and then they go out and they repeatedly take these cells out and they multiply the cells and we can feed the world with this one cow. First of all, it'd be wrong to exploit that one cow, number one. Number two, that's not the way it works, okay? That is not the way it works. You, in order to get these cells to make the muscle tissue, which is what they're growing, you have to take them out of animals. And you don't take them out of just one animal. You take them out of multiple animals. Looking for a quote here from the guy, Dr. Post, who came up with this insanity.
Is that the and University of the Netherlands?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Eventually, my vision is that you have a limited herd of donor animals, which you keep in stock in the world. You basically kill animals and take all the stem cells from them so that you would still need animals for this technology. Well, of course you're going to. And not only that, but you're going to have to keep changing those animals because the more the DNA replicates, the more there's a possibility that there'll be some abnormality. So you're going to have animals that from whom these cells are stolen. And then these cells will be grown in a bovine serum, which basically means they're going to kill mother cows and they're going to remove blood from an unanesthetized fetus. Now, is the fetus sentient? I don't know. It depends, I guess, how late in the term the fetus is. But in any event, you're going to be killing the mother cow to get the bovine, to get the blood from the calf so that you can grow these cells that you're taking from animals that you're slaughtering. The question, is this vegan? I mean, Bob, what is wrong with people? And I don't understand. I really don't understand why PETA's supporting this. Why Singer's supporting this? Why there are other organizations that are all excited about this. It just makes no sense to me. It also doesn't address the use of animals. I mean, we don't use animals just for meat. We use them for a wide variety of other products, food products and non-food products. It's not going to have any. I mean, even if you replaced all the meat, which you're not going to do, by the way, but even if you did, you'd still have all of these animals being exploited for these other products. The idea that this thing, you know, it took them several hundred thousand dollars to develop the technology for the one hamburger or whatever, you know, two hamburgers that they got out of what they've been doing. Does anybody really believe, however advanced this technology gets, that they're going to be able to compete with cheap factory farmed meat? And the answer is nope, it ain't gonna happen. And what really troubles me about this is animal advocates, rather than cheering this nonsense on, really should be standing up and saying, no, we've got to stop thinking about animals as things that we eat. And as a result, this is one of the reasons why, for example, someone once asked me, many times I've been asked, how about dumpster diving? If you take meat out of a dumpster, what's the problem? You're not creating demand. You're not creating additional demand. And the answer is, I wouldn't eat an animal that I got out of a dumpster for the same reason that if I were going through the dumpster and I found a fresh, nice, warm, fresh human arm, I wouldn't eat the human arm. Human arms and human body parts are not things to eat. Animal body parts and animal corpses are not things to eat. We need to stop thinking about animals as things to eat. That's the same reason, by the way, I would not eat even if someone had backyard chickens and said, you know, these are my, quote, pet, end quote, chickens. They die of old age, and I just eat their eggs. The answer is the chickens ought to eat the eggs because the chickens deplete their bodies considerably when they make the eggs. And if the eggs are unfertilized, the hens will generally eat them. But the bottom line is I want to reinforce the idea that eggs are not things to eat. I want to reinforce the idea that meat is not something to eat. Milk is not something to drink. Cheese is not something to eat. If we are going to take veganism seriously, we've got to react the same way to a question about in vitro meat or dumpster dived produced meat or whatever the adjective would be. We've got to react the same way we'd react as if I said to you, well, you know, what if we took stem cells from humans and we grew, human muscle tissue and it tasted really good? Would that be okay? And people would say, well, no. First of all, you're violating the rights of those that you slaughtered and got the stem cells from, and those you had to slaughter to get the growth serum from, etc. You would violate their rights, but also human beings are not things to eat. Similarly, non-human animals are not things to eat. This is the problem. And as long as we have the, quote, father of the animal rights movement, end quote, and organizations like PETA and others promoting this stuff, it really is a very, very bad idea, because we've really got to get away from the idea that animals are things to eat. And this idea that, well, but this is going to reduce a lot of suffering, the answer is, come on, get real. This is never going to be a technology that's going to replace cheap factory farmed meat. It just ain't going to happen. So, you know, my view is that animal people ought to be clear about this. In vitro meat is not vegan. It is not vegan because it involves violating the rights of non-human animals to make, and it perpetuates the notion that animals are things that we ought to continue to exploit. That's wrong. If we take animal rights seriously, if we take abolition seriously, the response is not to come up with another gimmick, but rather to just say, no, I will not participate in animal exploitation, because the bottom line is, it's binary, Bob. You're either vegan or you're participating in animal exploitation. There ain't no third choice. We've got to be absolutely clear about that. And so I think it's really, really important that, just this morning I posted on my Facebook site, the Abolitionist Approach Facebook site, some really disturbing things from Whole Foods, a poster of, you know, harpooned swordfish, and this is supposed to be a good thing. And you have all of these animal groups, Mercy for Animals, Farm Sanctuary, HSUS. HSUS is on the board, Wayne Pissell's on the board of the Global Animal Partnership that comes up with, you know, that provides the five-step animal welfare rating program that Whole Foods employs. I mean, animal people have no business being involved, particularly when they all claim to be abolitionists. They all claim to really want to see a vegan world. The answer is, you don't make a vegan world by encouraging people to buy harpooned swordfish. Anyway,
Gary, can you stay with us another few minutes?
Sure.
Okay, so we have a break coming up. We'll talk a few more minutes with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. If you are in the Bay Area, Northern California, one of the great restaurants in the world is in San Jose. Vegetarian House at 520 East Santa Clara Street. Check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. And suddenly, business is booming for Vegetarian House in catering. A lot of the Silicon Valley companies are coming to Vegetarian House because there are so many vegans now working in key positions, and we have to keep those vegans happy with some good food, not just, you know, a couple of slices of iceberg lettuce. And Vegetarian House just made Adobe very happy. It just catered an event for 1,000 people, so whether it's a company event or a wedding, get in touch with Vegetarian House in San Jose. It's a 100% vegan, organic restaurant, vegetarianhouse.us. We have a few minutes left. Professor Gary Francione, you were talking about in vitro meat.
Do they serve in vitro meat at Vegetarian House, Bob?
No.
Not vegan.
Right, and most people don't want to spend $120,000 for a burger, but they do have great vegan burgers there, that's for sure. So
I actually think it cost them a few hundred. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but I think it was several hundred thousand it cost them to produce what they produce. But, you know, it's interesting because you talk about Vegetarian House, vegan restaurant. I'm always asked by people, well, isn't it better that we go in to places like fast food places and demand that they have vegan alternatives? And the answer is, not on your life. I mean, you know, first of all, the stuff that they serve in those restaurants is not going to be vegan anyway, because it's going to be, you know, you're going to have, even if the veggie burger were completely vegan in a place like, you know, one of these fast food places, it's going to be grilled on the same grill that, you know, they're cooking dead flesh on. And number one. Number two, you're never really going to affect the market. I mean, McDonald's is never going to become a vegan restaurant. And I don't understand why vegans spend their money there. When you've got places like Vegetarian House and Loving Hut and all these places that are vegan, take advantage of them. I mean, obviously, if you're in a situation where you're in a non-vegan restaurant, you obviously should, get something vegan, clearly. But, and you generally can in most places, if only a salad. I generally, if I'm in a non-vegan restaurant, I very rarely eat cooked food because I worry about where it's come from and what's in it.
I had a job interview many years ago to become a program director of Jazzy 100 in Washington D.C.
Yeah.
They flew me in. I got in the car. I had to go to dinner with the guy who was going to hire me, and he took me to Blackie's House of Beef. I wanted the job, but along the way I'm begging, like, isn't there like a Mediterranean restaurant or some ethnic restaurant? No, we have a trade with Blackie's House of Beef. And I'm there, and it's like to the wait person, like, well, oh, do you cook the broccoli? I mean, is it in butter? And they didn't care. What?
Course,
who cares about you?
Of course. Yeah, no, I really, that's why I think, not only is it better in terms of eating vegan for you, but in terms of, I think we have a moral obligation. If we have the ability, if we have vegan places around, we ought to patronize them. Support them. Keep them going. Give people an incentive not to have McDonald's have a veggie burger, but rather for other people to open up vegan restaurants. This is the thing. Animal people have got to get away from this idea that we should support everything but veganism. I mean, you have all of these large organizations.
I'm laughing because of how true,
All these large organizations. They all claim to be vegan. They all claim to endorse veganism, yet they very rarely use the word vegan. Most of the time they say veggie or vegetarian, and they often talk, if they talk about vegan, it's a vegetarian or vegan, so they're promoting vegetarianism as a morally coherent position, which it's not.
Now, Vegetarian House and the San Francisco Vegetarian Society have had the word, but they've had the word like for so long before it was really compromised to the degree it is now, where you think.
Yeah, no. I understand. I mean, at one point, vegetarian did mean plant-based
right.
food. It just doesn't anymore. That's all. And it means anything but plant-based food. But I think, you have all of these large organizations supporting everything except veganism. They're all giving awards to people who sell happy animal products. The whole happy meat movement has taken over the corporate welfare movement. But listen, come to my website, www.abolitionistapproach.com, or the Abolitionist Vegan Society .org, which is a new group that's starting and getting some really, really good information out there. And listen to Bob Linden, Go Vegan Radio.
Thank you, Gary. We will talk to you again next week, Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. If you missed any of our discussion, the programs are archived at goveganradio.com. Greetings once again. It's the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, nationally syndicated on the Genesis Communications Network. Glad you can be with us today. Just want to remind you that if you're giving the kids a snack, it's J-E-L-L, no, because Jell-O is derived from gelatin, which traditionally is from the skin and bones of cows, pigs, and horses. So if you want to move away from gelatin products and feel good about giving the kids a better vegan alternative, that would be gelatin-free Cool Cups, natural gels made from seaweed. Cool Cups, three flavors. Pick up a four-pack of orange, peach mango, black cherry, fat-free, gluten-free, GMO-free, no animal ingredients, no gelatin, naturally low in calories. And to find out more about gelatin, go to cool-cups.net/gelatin. cool-cups.net/gelatin. You can pick up Cool Cups at Viva La Vegan Grocery, the world's largest vegan grocery store in Rancho Cucamonga, California. 6,000 items everything vegan, 9456 Roberts Street, or shop online. They'll send you cool cups if you want. Just click shop online at VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. Well, it was August of 1945 that the United States used nuclear bombs on Japan, and it seems that the U.S. has been using nuclear weapons ever since, and now we see nuclear energy has proven to be a disaster in Japan and elsewhere, and will be a threat into the foreseeable future for people, the planet, and animals, and what can be done, and you know, what's the true nature of the threat and what's happening? Well, I want to address the subject again with Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's been a guest in the past and very informative. Helen Caldicott, MD, is the world's most articulate and passionate spokesperson in opposition to nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. She's a physician from Australia, author, and she's been on staff at Children's Hospital Medical Center in Boston and taught pediatrics at Harvard Medical School. She's the founding president of Physicians for Social Responsibility, which recruited 23,000 doctors to educate people against the dangers of nukes, and the umbrella organization International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War won the Nobel Peace Prize. Dr. Linus Pauling actually nominated Dr. Caldicott for the Nobel Peace Prize herself. And her books include Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, The New Nuclear Danger, George W. Bush's Military-Industrial Complex, If You Love This Planet, A Plan to Heal the Earth, Nuclear Madness, What You Can Do, A Desperate Passion, An Autobiography, War in Heaven, The Arms Race in Outer Space, also Missile Envy. Welcome back to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Dr. Caldicott, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Okay. So, well, I mean, I think when I was a child, it seemed like the attitude was a lot more celebratory about the U.S. dropping nuclear bombs in Japan. And I'm wondering if we're having any regrets, or if we're looking more at the dangers of nuclear weaponry and the U.S. using depleted uranium. What is the state of nuclear weaponry at the moment, would you say?
Well, nothing's changed, in effect, since the Cold War ended. We all thought, well, thank God, Russia's not an enemy anymore, and we all stopped worrying. But the truth is that the American administration and the Pentagon never got rid of the weapons. America still targets Russia with over 1,000 hydrogen bombs, and China. And Russia, in reverse, targets America. Every city with a population of 50,000 or more is targeted, all universities, all factories. Same in Canada, Australia, Europe. I mean, the whole thing is a disaster. And these weapons that they have are what we call hair trigger alert. There are men in missile silos, two of them, with a missile with three hydrogen bombs on it. And they're in charge of pressing the button. They're aged 18 to 21. Some of them take drugs before they go down there, because I've spoken to their girlfriends. And if the button gets pressed inadvertently by mistake or computer error or human error, the weapons take only half an hour to go from launch to land in Russia. The Russians, meanwhile, pick up the attack on their satellite and they press their button, and so the weapons cross mid-space and the whole thing's over within about an hour. By the time the satellite picks up the attack radios back either to Moscow or to Obama, that sequence takes at least 15 minutes, and then it has to go from Nevada, I think, to the White House, and Obama will only get 3 minutes to decide whether or not to blow up the Earth. If you watch him always walking just behind him with a suitcase, is a man with an officer, and that is called the football, and it contains the codes for the president to start a nuclear war at any time of any day. Of the 20,000 hydrogen bombs in the world today, Russia and America own 97% of them. They're the ones holding the world at nuclear hostage. If there was a nuclear war, a huge cloud of toxic black radioactive smoke as the cities burn, would rise up into the stratosphere, covering the earth with a cloud so thick it would block out the sun for up to 10 years. The temperatures would plummet down to ice age level, and everything and everyone would freeze to death in the dark. Much of the ozone will be destroyed in the northern hemisphere, 70%, and 40% in the southern hemisphere, so people could go blind from the ultraviolet light from the sun. I could go on and on. But we live with that threat every second of every day, and we have near misses. In fact, there's an article just now saying at one of the Air Force bases where there are about 150 Minutemen III missiles, each containing three hydrogen bombs, they had a review, and I think 17 of the men there, or a large percentage, have been fired because their techniques for, you know, managing these weapons were no good. So, you know, we're in the hands of fallible human beings and fallible computers, and I really don't understand how we're still here. Meanwhile, America goes on and on about Iran, which has no nuclear weapons, about North Korea, which might have three. India and Pakistan are indeed a worry. Each of them have about 200, and they could start a small nuclear war, which could escalate to a major nuclear war. France and Britain and China have nuclear weapons. And now America's exporting nuclear reactors all over the world, and so is Japan. And a nuclear reactor to make electricity is, in fact, a bomb factory, because each one makes about 500 pounds of plutonium a year, manufactures it, and you only need 10 pounds to make yourself a nuclear weapon. So we're exporting bomb factories all over the world, which will cause lateral proliferation in little countries like Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, you name it, can make their own bombs, and the whole thing is totally out of control, and there's no one overseeing it, and people don't really know about it, or if they do, they're practicing psychic numbing. So we're all like blind lemmings rushing towards the cliff of annihilation.
Oh, you always cheer up my audience so much, Dr. Haldeke.
Well, you may as well know the truth. You know, I'm
yes.
a doctor,
right.
And I can't say to you I would be gentle, but if I had diagnosed that you had pancreatic cancer, I would have to tell you the truth that, you know, you might live for six more months and you could have these chemotherapeutic agents, which could make you go bald and make you feel sick. But the chances are I probably couldn't help you. And then you have to help the patient go through the stages of grief, like shock and disbelief and profound depression. That's part of medicine. Now, our planet is the patient. It is, well, maybe terminally ill, we're not sure. It's in the intensive care unit. And by extrapolation, all of us are physicians to a dying planet. Unless we pull our fingers out and decide we want our children to live and we love them so much that apart from immunizing them and making sure their teeth are all straight and clean, we'll guarantee they have a future. And that means not sitting in front of our Facebooks and Twittering, but getting out and taking over the country, which is what we kind of did in the 80s, where we had a million people in Central Park opposed to the nuclear arms race.
I remember the days of the No Nukes album, and I thought maybe we were making progress, but
We're not. And you see, the problem is the media, because the media is really determining the fate of the earth. As your wonderful President Jefferson said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. And if people are not educated and they don't know what's happening and how science is being misapplied and what the military's up to, then they go along in blind sort of, psychic numbing, worrying about what food they're going to eat or what clothes they're going to buy. That's sort of a manic denial without concentrating and knowing what threats are being imposed by the powers that be, and that is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. It's shocking just to hear you say that teenagers or you know, young people in their 20s are doing drugs and have, you know, the fate of the world in their hands. It's
Well, we've left it to them, haven't we? That's the legacy our generation, has left to our young people, and that is so, so irresponsible. And people say to me, oh, well, it's up to the young people now to fix it. No, It's up to us to fix it for them if we love them. I mean, how utterly irresponsible are we?
And the ongoing effects of the bombings in Japan from so many years ago, and the effects of depleted uranium that the U.S. has used. What are they?
Well, that's two different subjects. The bombs used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki had very little fallout. Not a lot of radioactive elements were created, some but not many. The most danger was from the gamma radiation that was emitted by the explosions, which is like very high-energy X-rays. And so the Americans formed the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission. They didn't start looking at the survivors until 5 years after the bombs were dropped. The New York Times and the rest of the media produced a total blackout on any information about what was happening to the people. People were dying of acute radiation illness with their hair falling out, vomiting and bleeding to death. They were dying of infections because their immune system was destroyed. Anyway, when they finally started looking at them, they'd been following them for all sorts of cancers.
Dr. Caldicott, we have to pause for a break, and we'll continue our discussion on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden with Dr. Helen Caldicott. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Follow us on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. And with over 200 restaurants around the world, Loving Hut is the fastest growing family of vegan restaurants anywhere. So check them out at LovingHut.us. Gary Francione mentioned Loving Hut before. We want to support vegan restaurants and vegan businesses, and Loving Hut is a great one. We're talking today to Dr. Helen Caldicott, the foremost expert on the evils and dangers of nuclear weaponry and nuclear energy. And before the break, we were discussing the consequences of the U.S. Bombing in Japan in August of 1945. And you didn't quite complete the thought on that. And then I think you were going to address the depleted uranium that the U.S. has been using also.
Yes, well... the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission, set up by America to examine the Hiroshima-Nagasaki survivors, provided no health insurance and no care. All they did was examine the survivors for disease. The incidence of leukemia, which is cancer of the white blood cells, rose dramatically about 5 years after the bombs and fell around 10 years. People still got leukemia, but the highest incidence was 5 years post-bomb. Then solid cancers like lung and bowel and breast and thyroid and the like started arising 15 years after the bomb. And it's very interesting because each cancer has its own incubation time. And we're seeing even now, years later, new cancers arising like multiple myeloma, cancer of the bone marrow and renal cancers and the like. So what we call the latent period of carcinogenesis, the time that evolves between being exposed to radiation and developing a particular cancer. So each cancer has its own latent period of carcinogenesis or incubation time, and you don't know that you're going to get cancer even when you eat radioactive materials because you can't taste, smell or see them, which is relevant to America now because of Fukushima. But let's go on to DU. DU is called depleted uranium. It's not depleted. When you mine uranium, there are two isotopes or different radioactive parts of it, uranium-238 and uranium-235. And uranium-235 is the fissionable element which breaks up in a nuclear explosion or produces power in a nuclear power plant. It's only present in 0.7% in the natural ore, and in Australia we have about 40% of the world's uranium. So it must be enriched to 3% for use in nuclear power plants, and you can't make a bomb out of it unless you enrich it to 50 to 70%. The enrichment process is very energy-consuming. It took two 1,500-megawatt coal-fired plants to enrich uranium for nuclear power. So when nuclear power people say, you know, they're clean, green and sustainable, they're lying. But what is left from this enrichment process is uranium-238, which has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. That means it's here forever. It's very radioactive. It's what's called an alpha emitter, and it decays to other radioactive elements, all of which are dangerous. Now, the military discovered these huge canisters of radioactive uranium-238, which had no use. They were nuclear waste. But this material is 1.7 times more dense than lead. So when you turn it into a shell, as momentum equals mass by velocity, you've got a big mass and a high velocity. These shells, which are made to penetrate the armor of tanks, really slice through the armor of a tank like a hot knife through butter. But because it's very reactive to air, it's pyrophoric. Up to 80% of the uranium shell burns in and turns into tiny little particles that can be inhaled into the lung. The tank becomes radioactive. The men inside are incinerated in a white-hot flash of fire, radioactive fire. Now, America's using this all over the world. And if you read the data from the Pentagon, they warn that soldiers must be protected, that this stuff's very dangerous, they must wear masks and the like and the like. But they're fine to use it all over Iraq on civilians. So in Basra years ago, they used 360 tons of this stuff. Soon after, my colleague's pediatrician started noticing a rise in childhood cancer. And it's risen enormously amongst the children who play in the dust, who eat the dust, who play in the damaged tanks and the like. And because of the sanctions, the doctors can't treat the patients because they have no chemotherapeutic agents.
Dr. Caldicott, we have to take another break. I'm sorry. So in an illegal war, look at what we use. We'll continue with Dr. Helen Caldicott. We'll also address nuclear energy in addition to the weaponry. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. When Dr. Helen Caldicott is on the program, time flies. She's so informative and revealing and enlightening about nuclear issues. I recommend you go to her website, helencaldicott.com, Helen, CALDICOTT.com. Dr. Caldicott, before the break, we were talking about the war crime. I mean, the war itself was a crime, and then the crime of using so-called depleted uranium. But we should probably go on to...
I just want to mention one other thing, that
please.
There's a very high incidence now of severe congenital anomalies, babies being born with single eyes or no brains, both in Basra and in Fallujah, where America used this revolting nuclear material. I mean, it's really a nuclear war over there. And so serious are these congenital anomalies, the doctors have told the women to stop having babies. But the problem is America has contaminated the cradle of civilization where arithmetic began and writing began and law began between the Euphrates and Tigris rivers with radioactive elements which will last forevermore. That's what America's done. That's beyond a war crime.
Hmm. And nobody will ever be prosecuted. George Bush gets a library.
Well, they must be prosecuted. I mean, they must be prosecuted according to the Nuremberg principles. They must be. So it's really up to the people whether they decide or not, and they have to be informed to know what they need to decide.
Yeah. I mean, it's outrageous that Bradley Manning goes to jail, you know, for revealing war crimes, and those who commit them get libraries named after them and big celebrations.
You're correct, and Bradley Manning's a real hero. What a lovely, lovely young man he is.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So we have the issue in Japan also of Fukushima, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I haven't taken Japanese in a while. And that's ongoing, it seems. And what Can you update
us
on...
Well, it's a disaster. I mean, I've been reading some emails today about it. Look, no one knows how to fix it. It seems that there were three meltdowns. Each reactor contained over 100 tons of uranium and the fission products, terribly radioactive. And when it lost its cooling systems because of the tsunami and the earthquake and the like, within hours, those three reactor cores started to melt through 6 inches of steel in the reactor vessel onto the containment floor of made of concrete, where they reacted with water to produce hydrogen. So there were four hydrogen explosions. Huge amounts of radiation escaped into the air and the water and the Pacific Ocean. It seems likely now that one or several may have melted right into the earth, and they'll never be able to get this incredible radioactive material out because it's so radioactive no one can go near it or they'll die. People are now saying it may start to pollute the Tokyo aquifer, and in that case you'd have to evacuate 40 million people from Tokyo. There still could be, and what is happening is that the mountain water is going, passing down underneath the reactors in an aquifer, and then and becoming extremely radioactive as it has contact with these radioactive cores, and is now going to the Pacific with very high levels of strontium and cesium and you name it, polluting the ocean and the fish. But also, the reactors are now very unstable because they're sort of floating on an aquifer, and the soil is becoming very muddy and not stable, and one or several could collapse if there's another earthquake, and there could easily be, and huge amounts of radiation could then be released from the cooling pools full of radioactive materials that stand on the roofs of the reactor buildings 100 feet above the ground, particularly Reactor 4, which has a cooling pool, which if it collapsed, it would burn, releasing 10 times more cesium than was released at Chernobyl. So we are entering a territory, a totally unknown territory in physics. No one knows what to do. They're running out of human bodies to cope with it because people are getting high doses of radiation and can't work there again. They're called nuclear sponges. The Yakuza, the mafia, are bringing in homeless people and mentally retarded people to try and operate the systems. I mean, I can't tell you, this is a disaster beyond compare of anything almost that's happened in the world, I suppose, apart from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which could contaminate conceivably much of the Northern Hemisphere.
Hmm. And so what do we on the west coast of California or anywhere in the United States have to worry
about? Right. Well, what you must demand is that the EPA set up monitoring stations all down the west coast and across America so that the air is monitored all the time to see if there is another ghastly accident that they know where the radiation's going, number one. Number two, the fish that are caught off the west coast need to be monitored very carefully, consistently and methodically, probably for the rest of time, because what happens is when radioactive elements get into the sea, the algae concentrate them like strontium 90, maybe 10 or 100 times, then the crustaceans eat the algae and they concentrate it further, and then the little fish eat the crustaceans and the big fish eat the little fish. And then we stand at the top of the food chain. So these elements, cesium, strontium, plutonium, americium, I mean, I could tritium, I could go on, concentrate most highly in our bodies. So you don't know you're eating a piece of sushi or fish which has radioactive elements in it because you can't taste, smell or see them. And what's more, when the cancer arises 20 years later, and I talked about the incubation time for cancers, you don't know what caused it. But all I can say is that tuna caught off the coast of California some months ago, and about seven of them contained cesium from Fukushima. And this is just the beginning, because more and more and more intensely radioactive water now is pouring into the Pacific Ocean. This is a catastrophe beyond any imagination, I think, of any human being. And I think 2 days after it happened, I kind of understood this. In my gut, I thought, my God, this will never end. And now people are starting to write about it and think about the unthinkable. It is the unthinkable. And what we need is the international community, the world, to go in and help them try and stabilize these blasted reactors. But the Japanese people are very proud. The government's proud. TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power, works with the Japanese government. They don't want to lose face. But the world, this is a global problem now. It's a global problem of public health beyond compare. And
but people
are not
attending.
Is there
anything that can be done at that?
Well, they can help to shore up the buildings and stabilize them in some way. But actually, if you ask me that question, the truth is, I don't think much can be done. I've been in touch with Arnie Gunnison, a wonderful nuclear engineer, and Michio Kaku and others are saying, really, there's not much that can be done, in fact.
Well, and then much of the sea life will be contaminated, as you say. Will there be any other effects? If we're looking at fish off the West Coast, any other effects throughout the United States at all from this, or around the world?
Well, Japan already, about 100. There are large numbers of children who have thyroid abnormalities, and that's only 2 years after the accident. It took 5 years for thyroid cancer to appear post-Chernobyl. Incidentally, about 1 million people died post-Chernobyl from the Chernobyl reactor accident. 40% of Europe is now contaminated with radiation. I don't eat European food because I don't know what's radioactive and what is not. Now, in Japan, about 27 children have almost certainly developed thyroid cancer, and that's the tip of the iceberg. We are going to see hundreds, if not thousands, of cases of cancer, thyroid, breast, bowel, you name it, in Japan.
And how do you evacuate? You said 40 million people
You can't, really. I mean,
right, you can't. You can't evacuate 40 million.
If you have a meltdown in America, you're going to evacuate people. You can't, because the roads get all blocked up. And, you know, what if Indian Point goes 35 miles from Manhattan? I mean, all the tunnels will be blocked, the bridges will be blocked. You can't evacuate people.
So nobody thought of this before building these plants, apparently. There was no...
Well, they kind of did. They kind of had evacuation plans and the like. But, you know, these things are built by engineers and by physicists, mostly men, who are terribly excited by the technology because it's big, big energy. The Department of Energy calls nuclear power hard energy, and solar power and wind power, that's just soft energy. It's feminine, you know. It's like an erection. And I think deep in their sort of reptilian midbrains, they see this as sort of sexy. And they're like doctors and surgeons. We don't clean up the operating room after we've operated on a patient. The nurses clean it up. We don't care about cleanup. Well, it's the same with these fellows.
And are there plants in the U.S. Similar to Fukushima that could result in the same crisis?
Of course. You can have an accident in any of your plants. You've got 102 operating now, I think, and many of them are at great risk. Many of them are old and falling apart, dilapidated, embrittled, and they're pumping out the power, more power than they're designed to do and use. You can have hurricanes and cyclones and floods and loss of power and a cascade of power failures across the country. You need to know that you're at great risk, and that children living under the age of 5 within a couple of miles of a reactor have a higher than incident, a sort of double the incidence of leukemia and a high incidence of solid cancers, because children are 10 to 20 times more sensitive to radiation than adults, and fetuses are thousands of times more sensitive. So you're living with potential catastrophes in almost every state. If you shut down all the reactors tomorrow, which you must do, then you're stuck with 70,000 tons of highly radioactive waste, which will overgenerate, which must be isolated from the environment for 1 million years, according to the EPA. And inevitably, this material will leak and get into water. And you can imagine our descendants waking in the morning, the breast milk already radioactive, the fetuses being damaged and born deformed in utero, babies and children developing leukemia at the age of 6 and not 60, cancers rife, food radioactive. I mean, that's the legacy we leave to our descendants so we can turn on our lights.
Very expensive, expensive way to boil water, huh? Is that the?
Well, it's not expensive; it's criminal.
Well, yeah, expensive in many other ways. Let's take one more break and have a couple more minutes left with you before the end of the show, Dr. Helen Caldicott. You can visit the website helencaldicott.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, GoVeganRadio.com. If acupuncture for your dog interests you, contact the Oceana Pet Hospital at 711 Oceana Boulevard in Pacifica, California. The number 650-355-6600. Acupuncture has been used in veterinary practice and traditional Chinese medicine for thousands of years for musculoskeletal problems, arthritis, disc disease, nerve injury, respiratory problems, skin issues, gastrointestinal problems, etc. And Dr. Nia completed the acupuncture course of the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. For more information, visit oceanapet.com. Oceanapet.com, open 7 days a week. And I wanted to get to this story today, but I'll postpone it till next week because we have Dr. Helen Caldicott with us. But a new study just released shows a connection of MRSA. MRSA infections have been rising over the last 15 years. It looks like an epidemic, and it looks like the MRSA bacteria has its origins in cows. So you may want to think twice about that glass of cow's milk or any dairy or cow flesh. Because this is a serious bacteria that has evolved and is now resistant to antibiotics. Every year, 90,000 Americans suffer MRSA infection and 20,000 die. Many of them are children. We have a few minutes left with Dr. Helen Caldicott, who is the foremost expert on nuclear, the dangers and risks and horrors of nuclear weaponry and energy. And Dr. Caldicott, I because it's also negative, I would like to leave on a positive note on what we can do. But also, I just wanted to ask, is there any reason to celebrate that San Onofre, California, that plant
was closed? Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. And do you know, it shows the power of the people. Any person can be as powerful as the most powerful person who ever lived. I mean, I went to America in 78, and most people said to me, it's better to be dead than red, meaning I'd rather have a nuclear war than be communist. And I thought, this is psychotic. So I organized 23,000 physicians, and we taught the American people about the medical effects of nuclear war. And in 5 years, 80% of Americans rose up and said, we don't want nuclear weapons. And that really was the second American Revolution, done by just Gandhian teaching, if you will. And here was I, an alien and a woman, and I led that movement. So please never underestimate what you are capable of doing. Each one of you can close down your local reactor for sure if you've got the passion in your soul and you want to save your children's lives. And if you love them enough, it's really about love. It's about love and passion and to understand how sacred all life is, not just human life, but 30 million other species that cohabit the planet with us.
Mm. Yes. So, when a plant closes, I mean, like San Onofre, I mean, I guess we celebrate that, but does that then have waste for, you know,
yes,
hundreds of thousands of...
Yes, then you're left with a huge amount of radioactive waste, which no one knows where to put it. And I've been debating with the nuclear industry for years, and they say, well, trust us, we're good scientists, we'll find the answer. And that's like me saying to a patient, well, you've got pancreatic cancer, you'll die in 6 months, but trust me, I'm a really good scientist. In 20 years' time, I'll find the cure. These people are really, I mean, they need to be indicted, I have to tell you, because they're long-term killers.
Yeah, and what is your suggestion?
You go to the electric chair, but these people know what they're doing. They know what radiation does to genes. They know it produces genetic abnormalities and cancers, and yet they keep going.
And what would your suggestion be for the waste? I mean, what?
Well, I don't know. I think at the moment the best thing is dry cask storage. You take the nuclear rods from the cooling pools and you put them in big concrete steel containers on the ground, but then they're open to sabotage and terrorism and, you know, earthquakes, and we're talking a million years. I really don't know the answer. There's a wonderful film called Into Eternity, made by a man called Michael Madsen. I've got an interview with him on my radio show called ifyoulovethisplanet.org. Listen to that and you'll get the gravity of the situation. Listen to it. It's very important. The other thing I suggest is go to my website, helencaldicottfoundation.org, download a symposium I held in New York in March called The Medical and Ecological Consequences of Fukushima. Listen to the whole thing. Learn. Educate yourselves, and then you will know what you must do. Your soul will guide you.
Thank you so much for being with us again, Dr. Helen Caldicott.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, archived at goveganradio.com if you've missed any of the program. You can support the show with a donation. If you'd like to advertise and become a sponsor, Go Vegan Radio.